Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by and welcome to the August All EN Payments call. During the presentation, all participants will be in a listen-only mode. Afterwards, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. At that time, if you have a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone. You may also use the chat feature located in the lower left corner of your screen. If you need to reach an operator at any time, please press star 0. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded today, Tuesday, August 26, 2014. I would now like to turn the conference over to Janet Cousin, Supervisor for the Payments Help Desk team. Please go ahead.
Thanks, Mandy. Again, welcome to the Ticket to Work August EN Payments call. If you're a new employment network or EN, we welcome you and thank you for working with Social Security beneficiaries. Thanks for our returning ENs who join us each month. We look forward to having you participate with us. We hope this call helps you to understand the many intricacies of payment processing for the Ticket to Work program. Again, my name is Janet Cousin, and I will be hosting the calls going forward. I am the supervisor for the Payments Help Desk team and happy to be here. Joining me today is Deborah Tennessee, Manager of the Ticket Operations Department for the program. Also joining us is Kathy Dyson, Consultant and Training Coordinator. And Kathy will be the primary speaker today as we talk through the agenda items. We also have Danielle Armstrong of the Social Security Admin Team on the line. There are no handouts for today's call. However, the agenda has been posted online and is being shared via the web. This will be an interactive session, and you'll be invited to ask questions after each topic by pressing the 1 and then the 4 on your phone. We do request that any questions you're asking over the phone are pertaining to the topic at hand, since many of those questions might be asked later in the presentation. Also, when you ask questions, do not provide information regarding your personal cases due to confidentiality issues. You can also ask questions in our chat room. We have Charles Powell, who's our technical assistant with the program, available, and he'll be answering your questions in the chat room. If we're not able to address all of your questions in the chat room during the conference call, we'll certainly make sure that someone gets back to you after the call. So today's discussion will focus on payment requests and earnings evidence review. So I'll turn the presentation over to Kathy to get started.
Well, good afternoon to everyone, and welcome to the All EN Payments call. This afternoon, we are going to actually speak on some topics in which we were able to retract some of this information from our payment help desk staff. We polled them to see what were some of the concerns or outgoing diaries that were more frequent than others, and this is what we came up with. So we thought this would be an excellent opportunity to speak on some of the information that we feel that would be very helpful to the employment networks. First on the agenda is actually the pay stubs. And what we are noticing is that when receiving pay stubs, that there are concerns that will hinder or delay the processing of cases. Let me, if I may, just give some information as to what is required on the primary pay stubs when submitting them. We need the employer's name. We need the actual ticket holder's name. We need the pay period beginning and the pay period ending dates. We need the actual pay dates. We need gross earnings and the applicable tax deductions, such as FICA. Any of this information that is missing will delay the processing of the case. Now, of course, if the pay stubs that are provided by the ticket holder does not provide all of the information, then the employment networks are able to submit what we call an SES, or the Employment Network Supplemental Earnings Statement, to accompany the pay stubs. So, again, if all of the information just mentioned is not available, then please, in addition with that, you may want to submit the actual EN Supplemental Earnings Statement. Any information from the stubs that you have, you want to roll that information over to the actual form and then fill in the missing information. so that we can match the two documents together. Now, of course, once we receive your payment request along with the pay stubs, in the event we have verified earnings in SSA database that can accommodate that particular claim month or payment type, then we won't diarize the case and send it back for the supplemental earnings statement. We will proceed with processing the case. But if there aren't any verified earnings there, then it will delay the processing of your case if we do not have all of the requirements on the pay stubs or if we do not have the supplemental earnings statement in conjunction with the pay stub.
Great. Thanks, Kathy, for that overview and providing some of the detail associated with pay stub requirements. Mandy, if you can open up the line or check to see if we have any questions from our callers, we'd like to take the time to answer any questions associated with the first agenda item, pay stub requirements.
Certainly. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. If you would like to register for a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone. You will hear a 3-tone prompt to acknowledge your request. If your question has been answered and you would like to withdraw your registration, please press the 1 followed by the 3. If you are using a speakerphone, please lift your handset before entering your request. You may also submit a question using the chat feature located in the lower left corner of your screen. Our first question comes from the line of Nicole Dummett. Please go ahead.
Hi there. My question may be a bit premature, but I'm sort of new to this payment process, and I received an email indicating that I had not submitted enough information on a particular beneficiary, but it didn't indicate who that beneficiary was. And I, in that same period of time, had submitted multiple payment requests. Is there an easy way to figure out which beneficiary is in question?
If you got it, this is Deborah Tennessee speaking. It sounds as though you received an outreach email from our payments help desk. And normally, when we send something from our payment help desk, we do reference a work case number. And Charles, you're here. You can maybe answer this. If not a work case number, shouldn't that email be encrypted if it's PII attached to it?
Yes. If you are going to attach a beneficiary's name and social security, it should be encrypted in either an Excel spreadsheet or a Word document password/encrypted with your 5-digit IBR PIN so that we both use the same password so that it's easy for the staff here to open up any attachments that are encrypted.
And, Nicole, if you did receive an email without reference to a work case number, and the reference to a work case number is so that you could check the particular beneficiary on the EN payment status report, the work case number is another way to identify the beneficiary. If we had a work case number there, you could go to the EN payment status report, match that work case number with the work case number in the EN payment status report, and then you could view the name of the beneficiary as well as the social security number. But if you did not get any of that in your email, just send the email back and basically state what you're saying, that the work case number was omitted or there's no information identifying the beneficiary, so you there's no way for you to tell which one beneficiaries that you need to submit additional information.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
Great.
Well, great. Thank you for that question. Are there any additional questions, Mandy?
Yes. Our next question comes from the line of Sarah Marthant. Please go ahead.
I have a question with regard to actual payment verification. We have had a couple of clients who have a little bit of a hard time getting their actual paycheck stubs. They have like one of my clients just gets a check from his employer, doesn't necessarily have all of the information that is needed for this. So should I submit the supplemental earnings statement along with a copy of his check, which has the employer's name and the employee's name?
No, that would not be sufficient because we do not know that employer is deducting FICA taxes, which he should be doing. So what in that situation, what you would need to get is an employer-prepared statement. That is a form that's on our website that the employer fills out. And Social Security wants to know that employer is paying FICA taxes or Social Security taxes on behalf of that beneficiary, and that the correct amount of FICA and Medicare taxes are being withheld from that beneficiary. If we do not have the withholding for beneficiary for FICA and Medicare, it has the appearance that this is a self-employment beneficiary or contractor. So we need to know from that employer what type of beneficiary it is, and we need to know that all the legal withholdings have been made for that beneficiary. That's information a beneficiary should be told anyway. He should really be getting something from that employer other than a net or a basic check.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. That was a great question. Do you have any additional questions, Mandy?
We have no further questions at this time.
There is, I'm not sure, Kathy, you may have already said this, but if you did, I just didn't hear it. I'm sorry if you did. But one thing we want to make real clear is on these pay stubs, we cannot accept any handwritten information. If you think that the information is not real, real clear, and you write over it, we cannot accept that. It would be better if you submitted that pay stub and attached a supplemental earnings statement along with it. Do not alter or write on the pay stub or change anything on it at all. Just attach the supplemental earnings statement along with it, and then we can process the payment.
That's a great point, Deborah. Thanks for that clarification. Charles, do we have any questions in the chat room that are associated with pay stub requirements?
Well, the one is if all information is on the last pay stub, is that acceptable? Example one, Ben Officiary started with a new company who did not have payroll set up to indicate all of the required information, and then a next entry is the required information was listed on the last pay stub from previous checks.
I'm really not sure. I would have to see that, because when you say all the information is not listed, what information are you talking about? We would need to know the beginning and ending pay period so we could calculate the value of the earnings, whether it was 10 days, whether it was 14 days, whether it was 5 days. And if payroll is not set up, I don't understand that either, because each employer should have in their payroll system a percentage for FICA taxes, Medicare taxes, some things like that. Maybe not all the benefits for a particular employee, but for their payroll, they should definitely have the tax situation set up. So I think on that one, we will have to just basically see what you're talking about here.
Okay, great. Was there any follow-up on that one, Charles, added to the chat at all? Or
Not on that question, but a question that just came in. What if participant is missing one paycheck, but the year-to-date information of earnings from a check before and after the missing check shows gross earnings and FICA taxes?
We can accept that because we can calculate the value of those earnings. If it's one check in between, what we would just do is look at the beginning and subtract out the earlier earnings from the last paycheck, and that would be the value of the missing paycheck. So we would accept that. Linda has a question about sometimes beneficiaries write on their pay stubs. And it all depends, Linda, on what they wrote. They wrote, this is my first pay stub. Of course, we'll take that. That's not altering any information that we need to see on there. But it all depends. If it looks like the numbers have been gone over, no, we could not accept that because we don't know exactly who did that or why that was done. But it all depends on what it is. I know sometimes people will take any piece of paper that's available to them and jot notes on it. But as long as it doesn't take anything away or add anything to the basic information that we've outlined to you that we need to see, it will be okay.
Very good. Great questions, and thanks for the responses, Deborah and Charles. Any additional questions on this one, Mandy?
We do. Our next question comes from the line of Denise Evans. Please go ahead. Denise Evans, your line is open. Please proceed with your question.
Hello?
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes,
we can hear you.
I had
now.
You on mute. I'm sorry. I was on the chat asking about the question with the beneficiary who started. She started new employment, and the first checks that she had for months just had the name of the company, the date, her name, and what they paid her. And she kept asking, you know, I need a regular check that shows, you know, the FICA, the Medicare, and all the information required. She lasted 3 months in the job. So the last paycheck that she received did have all the necessary taxes taken out of it from all the previous checks that she was given without that information on it. So I did get paid for one milestone, but not for the others because it said that all the information wasn't there. So I kind of don't know what to do with that.
And you know what? I don't think I would know what to do with that either because unless I would have to look at that because, as I said before to another EN who had a question, if we can sometimes back out mm-hmm. information. If we have the first one and we have the last one, but for
maybe
a situation like that, I wouldn't even know what the pay periods are. And one thing, the reason we have to know the pay period, beginning date and ending date, depending on the program,
right.
Our earnings are calculated differently, and we input those earnings into one of Social Security system that does the calculation for us. And that system requires us to input a beginning and an ending, date. So if we don't have those, the system can't calculate the value of those earnings to let us know whether or not the beneficiary has met the level of earnings under, you know, or a certain type of payment, whether it's trial work level or SGA. We have a system that does the calculation for us based on the information on the pay stuff. So there's a reason for mm-hmm. us requesting that information. So, I mean, I would just have to see it. See what we could try to do with that.
Should I try to just edit and just indicate that I did ask the question on this webinar? Or
you could send that into who wants to get that? I just want to send list someone's name so when the mail came in or whatever way it came in. If you could send that to Janet, attention Janet Cousin. COUSIN. Maybe we can all take a look at that. It might be a new one for us to try to figure this out.
I never.
I did work 3 months, yeah. Right?
I never said before. Tell the beneficiary really tried hard and hard to get the information, and
right.
Yeah, it's the type of company it was, and now she's not there anymore. So
okay, just send that in to us, and we'll take a look at it.
Thank you so much.
The payment help desk, too. Address it to the payment help desk. Attention, Janet Cousin.
Okay.
Now,
thank you.
Now, Denise, if you can submit along with that the employment supplement or earnings statement and maybe speak with the beneficiary to just help you out with trying to identify the beginning and ending dates in which she worked during
okay.
that time period and maybe when she got paid, it will help us to be able to do the proper calculation and data entering so that you can get credit. The
right.
bottom line is, yeah, based on the program,
mm-hmm.
The earnings may be there if it's paid in a particular month, but maybe
yeah.
not if it's based on pay per ending date, in which she may be under that particular program. So, in other words, you may not get credit where you
mm-hmm.
may be qualified.
She was SSDI and above SGA each month. I know that.
Okay, and if she's okay, then yes, we would most definitely need the pay per ending date.
Okay, and can I just go into the employer and try to give them the employer prepared statement?
That would be good.
If you can get the permission from the ticket holder to speak with her employer,
yeah,
and yes, I'm sure that will be fine. And just present that actual document. It will probably help the employer from having to spend additional time in drafting up some sort of statement.
Because legally they do have to provide that, correct?
Yes.
I thought. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. All right, great question.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, any additional questions, Mandy?
We do. Our next question comes from the line of Steve Gerke. Please go ahead.
Hello.
Hello.
A couple questions that are related to what we're talking about here. I've had situations where, for example, I have someone that I could be all the way up to phase one, milestone three, but I'm missing one pay period of 2 weeks. And his relationship with the employer is changing. He doesn't have the pay stub, and he can't seem to run the employer down. So he's still working for the company unless he got a job that I just might have placed him in. So I will have other pay stubs beyond the missing one. So I guess I'm just trying to verify what you're saying in terms of if I have a pay stub after the missing one, you can use that in terms of the year-to-date
yes,
information?
Yes.
That would be awesome because, you know, I just don't know how to get around it if you just can't get it. For
yeah.
some reason, but you have other pay stubs after it.
Before and after.
Yeah. Well, I have all of before, and then there's just two missing for the phase three.
Okay.
This is one pay period actually missing for the phase three. So,
yeah.
So I can, you know, I would submit all those ones. So in
mm-hmm.
terms of submitting a payment request, I would submit a payment request for one, phase one, two, and three, and then the pay stub, you know, beyond the one that was missing, and then that should do it?
Well, you may want to go ahead and, of course, include the EN supplemental earnings statement and
okay.
just indicate what the actual payout amount would have been, the gross and the pay period, beginning any dates and the pay dates. If you could fill that in and include that along with the pay stubs, then that would help direct.
Yeah, I could guess at it. He could guess at it, but if we don't have the actual stub, it would be, you know, his pay periods are relatively stable, but occasionally he does overtime, but, you know, they're pretty consistent, so.
It shouldn't be a problem with that because
yeah.
it's like, it's going to be 7 days, 10 days every 2 weeks, a month, whatever.
Right.
Even if they do overtime, it's probably hourly, and it's not going
right.
to be beyond the ending of the pay period. But to tell you the truth, Steve, if you're going to submit a supplemental earnings statement on it, you would do the same thing that we did. You would look at the one before the missing one to see when that pay
mm-hmm.
period ended.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever that ended, the next day, normally a pay period
right.
began.
Right,
and
exactly.
And you can figure out, yes, and then you subtract
yeah.
the year-to-date, you know, the previous from the year-to-date and fill in all the rest of it.
Yeah.
Exactly
well, I've been using the monthly estimator to help me with some of this stuff.
Oh, yeah, and that's a great tool.
That's excellent.
Mm-hmm.
Very good tool
that,
to
use. You know, I've been using that a lot, you know, and it really puts it out there. So then if you were, for some reason, unable to obtain it from the individual and you are, you know, attempting to go to the employer, of course, you may or may not have a relationship with the employer. So if you don't have a relationship with the employer, and you're going in there to attempt to get them to sign some kind of paper talking about pay stubs, in terms of disclosure, that seems to me something that can be an issue in terms of the person may not have disclosed they have a disability. You know, what are you supposed to say in that case to try to obtain these pay stubs? I always have my people give me permission to call the employer or contact the employer, but it's still a matter of disclosure issues.
Well, if you're using the EN supplemental earnings statement, it doesn't require the employer intervention. So you can always continue to submit the primary evidence, which is the pay stubs, and if you, again, can't seem to obtain one that's in between your pay stubs, then you can always submit the EN supplemental earnings statement with the missing information, and you will not have to you know, involve the actual employer at that point.
Sure. However, if you are, I mean, I have a guy that worked for an employer, and he told me that he made over SGA for 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
But he will not provide me with anything, and this is back in November.
Well,
I guess I could just do a certification statement on him, but.
You could do a certification statement, Steve, or you could go into the portal and see if there is a CUBRA report for that beneficiary where the employer reported the quarterly earnings, because you said back in November or whatever, there should definitely be.
Yeah, it's a local car dealership, and I don't know if they're a national company. Could that be in the portal?
Sure. I mean, it all depends.
Oh, okay.
I mean, based on what I understand about the CUBRA report itself, it's based on information that the Office of Child Support and Enforcement gets from the state unemployment agency. So if an employer is reporting or paying unemployment compensation or whatever, I think they are doing reporting on their staff. So that's, I mean, everybody does not use it, to tell you the truth. The SEI data is not there. But we tend to find that is maybe the only source of information that sometimes ENs are able to get is from the CUBRA report.
Okay.
Or CUBRA.
All right, well,
and then once the ticket holder actually files their taxes, there may be a delay in us obtaining the information. But if they file taxes, they're submitting or using their W-2s, then that information is also posted in an area that we have access to. And we can go in and actually view the actual earnings from that particular employer. But it just, again, may be a delay in your receiving payment because that will be behind the taxes. So there's other ways of actually going around trying to obtain that information.
Yeah, I mean, I actually was paid on three people in June that were just not getting me information, you know, and, you know, I was paid, and I'm assuming that was because the information was obtained from the IRS, so.
Yes, it's possible.
Steve, great question. Thank you for your call.
Thank you.
Now, the CUBRA was mentioned. That's the second item under our list of items to review. Mandy, are there any additional callers waiting?
We do have two questions in queue.
Okay.
Okay. Our next question comes from the line of Tamara Mickel. Please go ahead.
Hi, this is Tamara Mickel from Arizona. How's everybody?
Hi, how are you?
I'm great, great, thank you. I have a question and a request on the supplemental earnings statement. I'm a little confused about the bottom of it where it says, the employer representative name and signature. I, filling it out, am not the employer's representative. So
right.
It catches me every time I go to fill this form out, and it really confuses me. Why is it that way? And then it wants me to check off that I attest that the holdings are required by law and made that they're correct. And I don't know that either.
If that's on the supplemental earnings statement, it should be the EN representative. And that part about withholdings and all that, which you just mentioned here, should be what's on the bottom of the employer prepared statement.
Yeah, I think it's incorrect. And my request is the font that is used for the input that we put in is all mixed up. I know that's something kind of, you know, wishy-washy to ask, but it would be nice if all the font was correct across the board on that form so it looks professional.
Is this in a portal, or are you just talking about?
No, this is off of your forms, off of your website.
Okay. Okay. I remember this coming up when that form was posted the last time. We caught that error, but it had already gone through the office that is supposed to approve forms, and it's going to take a while for them to approve the correction, even though that's not what we submitted. So we understand that that's done. But as far as the font and all is concerned, I think that we can maybe check that here, see if it's something we could do. We may not be able to change the form, but the font, couldn't we change that? Is that something, Mark? Okay. We'll check, but Charles said he doesn't think we can, but if it's at all possible, we will. But Charles, he doesn't think so.
Okay. Thank you.
Tamara, thank you for your question. We'll follow up on those points that you make. And
thank you.
See what we can do there. Thank you. Okay. Sandy, there was one more call.
Yes, we have a follow-up question from the line of Sarah Martin. Please go ahead.
Hi, I have just one quick follow-up question with you. I actually had a run-in with an employer who I was trying to get some copies of paycheck stubs, and I was told that it was a HIPAA violation to even give out that information as far as like a copy of paycheck stubs or anything like that, which I don't necessarily think that that's right. But anyway, this particular employer did not want to provide any of that information. I typically have my clients go ahead and sign so that I can get that information, but is there any other way aside from just waiting for them to, I mean, waiting for the information to be uploaded to the portal so I can see it there, is there any other way to, I guess, in the lack of a better way to say it, force them to give them to us?
So is this beneficiary, are you still working with this beneficiary?
Yes.
Because I don't think that is a HIPAA violation. I don't believe it is. There's no information on there about, I mean, that would, there's nothing on there as far as I know, but maybe they don't understand or they have it wrong. I would just ask them to check with, is this their HR department or is this someone else who just works in the office?
No, it was their HR department.
Because I think they need to check that. The only other way I know of getting earnings information is from the work number. It's through a third party that could give you information probably faster than the Keeper, which is about 6 months behind, especially if the beneficiary is working now and you could be submitting earnings for claims now instead of, you know, just waiting the six-month period. So you could either do it that way, but the only other thing I could think of is to tell maybe the beneficiary, or even you could tell that employer that Maximus receives these all the time as long as you have the authorization of the beneficiary, so you don't understand why this particular employer is, pardon?
No, Linda just put up the third-party option for.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay, someone in our chat line here put up the option of third-party going to, like, the work number to get earnings. But again, I just think someone there just doesn't understand. You do have authorization. And if they don't want to give a copy to you, give it to the beneficiary and let them give it to you.
Exactly.
I mean, if you have that authorization, the beneficiary is still working with you, let them make another copy and give it to the beneficiary.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Yes, thank you. Some great questions. Well, obviously, this was a good topic of discussion for today. Lots of discussion here. Mandy, was that our final call in the queue?
Yes, we have no further questions in the queue.
Great, thank you. So we'll transition to the second bullet on the agenda, which is the quarterly beneficiary earnings report, also known as the CUBER. Kathy?
Okay, great. Well, primarily, I believe what had come up is that in submitting the QBER or the Quarterly Beneficiary Earnings Report, that sometimes there's the impression that there's payments guaranteed upon submitting that information. There is an actual write-up and going in and viewing what is actually posted there on the portal that does indicate that, if I may just read it, that this earnings information is intended to give you an indication of beneficiaries' levels of earnings to assist you in deciding if you should request a payment. The information does not guarantee that you are eligible for payment. Several other variables apply when granting payments. Even if the beneficiary is reported with earnings over 3 times the SGA for a quarter, the only way to determine if the beneficiary has achieved payment outcomes is to submit a payment request to the operations support manager for a milestone outcome payment. Now, that is truly the case, and all payment requests that are submitted, whether it be from the QBER or primary evidence such as pay stubs, again, there's other variables involved that we have to go in to determine if, in fact, the earnings are there, they are qualifying benefits, or if they're in the right position based on what payments should be paid to the actual employment network and other factors. So, again, the portal does provide you an opportunity to view to see if there are earnings out there that may possibly qualify you for a payment, but they're not guaranteeing a payment. Also, let me, if I may, indicate that the portal pulls from a source in which unemployment or military pension or state benefits are posted. So sometimes the information that you receive may be a combination of wages in addition to benefits or pension, and so it may have the appearance of being qualified earnings. So when that information is submitted, the specialist will go in to view exactly what is posted to see if they are wages versus pension or other types of insurances such as unemployment. And then, of course, from there, decide if, in fact, they're qualifying earnings for that particular quarter. Also, you want to keep in mind that self-employment or federal government agent workers' information is not reported to the source in which the QBER is pulled from. So just want to put that out as other factors to think about when looking at the portal and trying to, of course, submit for payment.
Great. One other reminder we would like to put out there to ENs, we have been seeing payment requests submitted, and for evidence, ENs are annotating on the payment request, QBER. That is not acceptable. You have to submit copies of the QBER with the payment request. Just like in the old days when there was the EIR, you have to submit copies of that. You have to submit copies of your evidence, earnings evidence. Some have been coming in. I think there have been some specialists who have been checking and trying to go in the portal to find it. This is not what we are to do. This is we put that out there for you. That's the step you have to take. If you want to use the QBER as your evidence, you need to submit a copy of that along with your payment request. From this point forward, if we don't get a copy of the QBER and it's just annotated on the payment request, we're going to diarize those cases for 9 business days. We're going to send it back, send an outreach message to you to submit a copy of the QBER that goes along with that payment request. And please, when you do that, send us the report for that particular Social Security number. We're also getting QBERs that are
maybe pages. The tops are cut off. We don't know what quarters they are. It takes longer for us to process your payment request. At least highlight or put an asterisk if there are multiple SSNs on a page. Show us which ones that goes with that particular payment request, because we're not able to it takes us a while, I'll put it that way, to go down that list. And sometimes what we get from ENs are smudge copies, whatever. It's taken us longer to process your payment request. But at least remember to attach a copy of the CUBRA if that's your evidence with the payment request.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Deborah, for bringing that to the attention. It does slow down even the information being uploaded into the database where you won't see it showing right away on your Employment Network status report. So when the portal is designed for, of course, the convenience of the employment networks, and that's exactly what the intent is and what we want it to continue to be. So you are given an opportunity to upload multiple Social Security numbers and obtain possible hits. However, when submitting that information, you want to just separate it and submit it separately and not as a report.
Someone did ask the question, I think, do you have to upload a copy of the CUBRA when we submit through the portal? The answer to that is yes. And let me tell you why we're asking for this copy. When we process a payment request here, we have to have all the documentation that we use to make a determination, whether it's a payment or a denial. And copies of everything that we use have to be attached to that case and held in Social Security system, and an audit trail has to be maintained. So GAO, whoever comes in to audit, Social Security systems changes daily information on it. So we also have to capture screenshots of what Social Security system shows on any given day. Earnings evidence that's submitted by you, we keep that in the portal. Not in the portal, but exit-based payment systems to show why we made a determination to pay you. Because if it's not there, there's really no justification. We could have paid you incorrectly for all an auditor knows. So we have to have copies of all supporting documentation and all justification that we use to make a payment determination. So we need that copy of the CUBRA or pay stubs or whatever your payment evidence is, along with your payment request.
Excellent. Great. Thanks for the clarification on that. If I can... Okay. Thank you. We're going to move on to the third item on the agenda, which is listed as acceptable methods for submitting payment documentation. What we'd like to do is go ahead and make it through the summary review of each of the bullet items, and then we'll have a Q&A at the end. Okay? All right. Kathy, if you can continue.
Okay. Thank you so very much. I've been told that sometimes we do receive payment requests along with additional information when there's an outreach for additional information that it's submitted by way of email. And, of course, that's not the primary way in which we should receive payment requests. We do keep records of every payment request submitted. We have stats that we have to stay on top of. We get thousands and thousands of requests. And so to be in compliance with our metrics, we ask that whenever receiving an outreach for additional information or you just are generally submitting payment requests, please just continue to submit it by way of fax. The fax that you can use is 703-893-4020 or 703-893-4149. You may also mail it. You may mail it to Ticket to Work Program, P.O. Box 1433, Alexandria, Virginia, 22313. Again, that's Ticket to Work Program, P.O. Box 1433, Alexandria, Virginia, 22313. And then for those that are pretty savvy with the portal, and that's what we were hoping everyone to be in the future, if not now, by way of the portal, you may also submit your payment request.
Excellent. Great. Thank you, Kathy, for that information. Charles is documenting that in the chat, and certainly the information is available online as well. But we wanted to ensure that everyone understood the correct methods of payment. Certainly submitting personal information via email is violation. So these are the two, the three best and acceptable preferred methods for submitting your documentation. Okay, number four, we're going to discuss when is Section 5 of the payment request form required? Kathy?
Yes, this is a very important area on the actual payment request that we find a lot of concerns from some of the employment networks. And so this gives an opportunity to just mention that whenever the employment network is prepared to submit their payment request for the Phase 1 milestones, Phase 1 milestone 1, 2, and 3, then Section 5 is required to be completed. On the actual payment request, it actually spells it out for you. If you are submitting a request for, let's say, Phase 1, Milestone 1 and 2, it is asked that you submit, along with that, the date of service in which you provided and what type of services that you provided. If there are earnings that we find in which you may qualify for maybe a Phase 1 Milestone 3, what will happen is that we will process your request for 1 and 2. But we would have to diarize your case and outreach to you to complete Phase 1 Milestone 3 of that particular section. So in the event you have additional information that you have provided that may accommodate all three, by all means fill it in and submit it. And if we go into the databases and find that there are available earnings, then it will not delay your payment, and we'll be happy to go ahead and process it.
Great. Thanks, Kathy, for summarizing the scenarios when Section 5 of the payment request form are required. Our next and final bullet under this topic is associated with premature payment requests. Let's review those scenarios.
Oh, yes. We don't get very many of these, but we do have some employment networks that are very on top of their game. Overachievers is what I want to call them, and, of course, that's fine, but what happens is that our database is just not set up to process them. So what we're asking is that according to the new regs and the requirements, you would have to wait until that particular claim month in which you're asking for a payment for has passed and before you can submit it. Of course, there will be situations in which a particular ticket holder may work and obtain the qualifying earnings with the first pay stub of that month. But unfortunately, you would have to wait until that month is over before you submit a request for that particular month. What happens in the event you submit that information, if you submit a payment request in the very same month that you're asking for a payment, we cannot add that to the system at all. It will not go into the system. We will have to simply outreach and ask for you to wait and send it back. If we try to even hold it and process it, again, if we're audited, that's a violation because the signature date from the representative or the stamp date from the fax number is on these documents, and it will show that we processed the case in the same month in which the request was for, and it should not have occurred. So please, if you can, just be a bit patient, and you may submit it the very first day behind that month. That is acceptable.
Great. Thanks, Kathy. Again, just to review, payment requests must be submitted during the following month, not the current month of the payments. So it's considered premature if it's processed in the same month. Thanks again for that clarification. Those are the key topics that we wanted to review today related to payment request and earnings evidence review. If we can take we'll have a few minutes to provide some additional questions and answers associated with those questions. But the last item I wanted to share is to remind everyone that the EN payment status report that we have been sending electronically through an email distribution will be discontinued in that electronic format. This Friday, the 29th, will be the last email push that we'll be sending with that report. The report is viewable online via the secure portal. Last week's Ticket Training Tuesday session, if you participated in that, they went through an extensive presentation on how to access the report online and how to use the filtering capabilities of the online report. We consider this to be an enhancement and improved feature for you guys, because you'll be able to see the information closer to real time. There's a two-day processing period from the time the data that's viewable online, but it is a lot more current than waiting for a weekly email report. And again, you do have some filtering capabilities. You can find that presentation that speaks to those details on your tickettowork.com website. If you click on the information center on the left navigation bar and then click on training, you'll see the presentation noted in the list there. So those are the key points for today's discussion. Mandy, if we can solicit any additional questions and final questions for today, we'll be happy to address those.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. As a reminder, to register for a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone. Our next question comes from the line of Mark Marsh. Please go ahead.
Thank you, and good afternoon, all. I actually have two questions. The first one being, do you require for on the dates of service and the types of service for the Phase 1 milestone billings the actual service entries themselves, or do you just need the number of service entries and what they were? That would be the first question.
You could give us a date, okay, and you can kind of generalize the services instead of listing them all. Like if you provided counseling, if you provided some job coaching or things like that, you could just list those that way instead of send email, you know, that level of detail you do not have to give us, the lowest level of detail. You could just summarize whatever you did in one or two one or two topics. That's all.
Okay. Now, the other question is a really crazy one. I have a beneficiary who actually submitted his pay stubs. This is for Phase 1 milestones, and I have all the pay stubs for Phase 1, Milestone 1, Milestone 2, and Milestone 3. And in this instance, the Milestone 3, Phase 1, was achieved in January of this year. And then getting ready for the final Phase 1, Milestone 4, unfortunately, and I have stubs through the January 2014 for the first three milestones. Unfortunately, he suffered an accident and died before I got the stubs for the Phase 1 M4, which would have been his ninth month of work above SGA without federal cash benefit. So in that instance, would I have to and he died actually in the middle of the month, but he was making quite a bit of money. So it's possible that he would have earned enough to qualify for that Phase 1 Milestone 4. But I don't have any stubs, and when I attempted to get them, unfortunately, that was impossible at this point. I know who his employer was, but it was outside support, and his employer didn't know about the relationship with REN. So the question comes, is there a way that I can submit a payment request Oh, and by the way, Social Security did terminate his ticket, and his ticket was unassigned June 30th, and then the ticket was terminated July 1st. So he's no longer active in the system. But I'm wondering if there's a way that I could still bill for phase 1M4 in the absence of those pay stubs.
What month did he actually die?
He died April 18th.
Okay, okay.
But he was making quite a bit of money, so I'm sure that even for a half a month of payment, for earnings anyway, that he would have achieved the necessary amount to trigger the final phase one payment there. And
so
then,
you're
of course,
looking
the
for you're looking for 3 more months of activity where you did not.
Yes, and I didn't get the stubs for that, unfortunately, before this happened. So.
Okay, I believe right now we're looking at the second quarter of 2014, which would be that, well, yeah, April. You should have.
Right. The claim month would have been April 2014. That would have been the phase 1M4.
Okay, so maybe that information is in CUBRA. Because I think when I looked at the last CUBRA report, I saw activity for the second quarter of 2014.
Okay.
So maybe able to get it there. And if not there, the only thing I could think of right now is to go to work number and see if that employer reported that there.
Okay.
Okay. Let me if I may ask the question.
You.
I just want to make sure I need some clarity. So the month in which the ticket holder is passed, that's the actual attainment month in which the Phase 1 Milestone 4 would have been qualified?
Correct.
Okay. Well, unfortunately, although there are earnings to be had in that particular month, there is no payout on the month in which the ticket holder is deceased.
Ah, so we would not be able to even attempt to. Okay, I hear what you're saying. In the month in which a beneficiary becomes deceased, that does not count. Any earnings in that month do not count for the ticket payment. Is that
but you said
what I'm
the ticket
hearing?
Was actually terminated in June?
Yes, it was done automatically because when I spoke to the person who was a companion, basically, I told her, I said, well, you have to report this to Social Security and so on. She already done so, so that the ticket was terminated on July 1st and his ticket was unassigned automatically. It wasn't something that I did. On June 30th. So the unassignment took place the day before his ticket was terminated. But the deceased month was April.
Yeah, because normally what would happen, the system can, based on postings to the master record for date of death and so forth, would do the termination. There are rules, I believe it's the month prior to the date of death. It's the last payable month, but I wasn't sure.
How about if I take the CUBRA, if there's information there and it actually shows up, that I go ahead and bill anyway and then I can get a denial?
You can, oh, yes, bill it and then protect the policy because I'm not really sure. There are rules as far as what the last payable month is, and I can't remember right now for date of death whether it's the month prior to that date of death or not.
Yes, this is
okay.
Daniel Armstrong with Social Security. Kathy was right. Depending on the type of benefit that he was receiving, if he's not benefit eligible in that month, of course, one of the rules to receive payment is that they have to be eligible for the disability payment that month. And just going off the dates that he's giving on the call, it doesn't appear that he would be eligible. Now, by all means, send it in and get your formal denial. But just based on the information, the basic information that you've given on this call, he wouldn't be eligible.
Okay. Thank you very much. We'll take 3 milestones.
Okay.
Absolutely.
For what
great.
You did do.
Yes. Great question. Thank you.
Okay.
Amanda, is there another question?
We do not have any further questions, but as a reminder, you can press the 1 followed by the 4 to register for a question.
Okay, great. Well, we don't have any additional outstanding questions on the chat either, so.
I'm sorry for the interruption. We actually do have a follow-up question from the line of Tamara Milkey. Please go ahead.
Okay, great.
Hi, thank you.
I want to make sure that I heard this correct. On the premature requests, we are not allowed to have them signed the prior month?
I'm not sure what do you mean by prior month. If you are asking...
If I was working July and I received a pay stub and it was over the child work amount and I was okay to do a payment request, but I have to hold it till the following month.
Yes.
I have to sign it the following month. I can't sign it like July. But when I completed it.
Well, if you sign it the same month in which you completed your paperwork, but you don't submit it until the following month, that's fine because what will happen, we will get a confirmation through the electronic submission that shows that it wasn't submitted until the following month.
Okay, great. Just wanted to double check that.
And
thank you so much.
And just note this for premature requests. If you do send them the month before the attainment month, or you send them the month before the request should be submitted to us, we just destroy them. The system will not even allow us to put those payment requests in based on the date. It will not accept any, because we have to put a claim month in the system. So if we're in August and you submit a payment request for August, it will reject it. And we do not have a system where we're managing paper and holding it until the right date comes up. So that's why we're letting you know this. If you are sending those in, trying to get ahead of the game, those they are eventually just thrown away because we cannot do anything. We can't put them in the system.
Okay. I understand. Thank you.
Okay.
You're welcome. Great. Awesome. Thank you. Well, this was a great session today. Lots of great questions. We're happy to have the participation. Thank you again for joining us for this All EM Payments call. And we hope the information shared was helpful for you. The minutes for today's call will be posted online in the Information Center under the Events Archive. Thanks again for joining us, and have a great day.
Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude the conference for today. We thank you for your participation and ask that you please disconnect your lines.